Back in session. Help me out, Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. I believe we are on item number 16 by my count.
Number 16. Great. This is discussion and possible action. The board's order for the treasurer to hold a sale of real property held in trust because of tax delinquency and to direct the notice is done by publishing in the paper. That right verbiage?
Yeah, it doesn't.
To direct the notice is done. Okay, is done by publishing in the paper. Okay.
Good afternoon, board. Robert Morse for the record. A few months ago, I started helping the clerk's office in preparing for a sale. This is a requirement of NRS that the board approve an order of sale of real property. I believe there's a list of approximately 8 properties that are ready to go to sale. I've been working with Deputy Clerk Dori Nevin in preparing this. She has set up files. We've also set up a checklist procedure so that on future sales they'll be able to do it a little more easily. The notice can be done either of 2 ways. One is posting it 3 places in the county, or as an alternative, you can publish it in the paper. I think publishing in the paper is a much better way to get it out to the folks. And so we'd be asking that when you approve the order of sale, you direct that notice be done by publication. And if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
I have one. Have we determined, are we going to actually do this by live auction, or are we going to attempt to use the internet?
I think we talked about internet. I've said that I can help either way. And just as a little bit more, the sale is probably going to be in August or September. There's a 90-day requirement of notice before you do the sale, so it has to be set out for a while. But I believe that the sale will actually occur in August or September.
We in fact send out notices to the property owners that we're going to be auctioning off their properties.
They do get a notice, personal notice.
And this should give us a good opportunity to, before we make that decision to do online sales or not, to assess the success in selling these 3 properties over here. Because again, unless Mr. Maddox says differently, I think we'll do the auction versus closed sealed bid. And you know, we have a lot of good, strong local interest in these properties. So
the last time the county did an auction, I think it was online.
Correct.
Yeah, was that a sealed bid, or is that live online as well?
It's live on eBay.
What if there's a way we could do sealed bid online and then have a live auction as well, because to try to maximize revenue?
I think it has to go by auction the way the statute's read.
Well, a sealed bid is a part of the auction process. Mm-hmm. It would be enough to exceed price.
Well, they'll definitely look into it and make sure that we have as many different alternatives as possible.
Okay.
You know, and this is something too. I don't think, how long has it been since there was a tax sale?
About 10 years.
Okay.
Quite a while.
And we're going to, try to do that, maybe another one next year, and then be on a 2-year schedule so that in the off year, in election years, we won't have one, and then in next year we will. And in talking to Vanessa, she thinks that that's about the frequency with which we need to do this. I think Douglas County did it every year, but they had a lot more property.
Correct.
We'll probably do this, like I said, maybe next year, and then get on a every other year schedule where we have tax sale.
If memory serves me correct, the last auction, there were some issues with some of the properties that were sold.
Yeah, that's why we've tightened it down.
Okay, am I sure all of our ducks are in a row?
Well, we will have.
Okay.
All right.
Is there any public comment on this? Okay, at this time we'll look for someone to entertain a motion to approve the order of the sale and direct notice be done by publication.
So moved. I'll second that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving along, number 17, discussion of possible action, resolution 14-395, removing the jail fund tax rate from the tax bill and placing the jail fund tax rate into the general fund and making the operation and maintenance of the Story County Jail a subcomponent of the Story County Sheriff's Department's, should be Story County Sheriff's Office, budget and transferring the ending balance fund of the jail fund at the end of the budget year.
Okay, this is, we've talked about it for a long time now. This is where we get rid of the jail fund, put that money, so that tax rate into the general fund, and then make the jail operation and maintenance a subcomponent of the sheriff's budget. The last time, or one of the times in one of the meetings, I was asked about a little bit more of the history of the jail fund. From here on out, I'm going to go over to Dean's office and see if he has a file on things, instead of asking anybody else. But as it turns out, way back, and we started the project of building the jail in 1989. It looks like, and this, I'm talking in somewhat in generalities, but at some point in time, this Western Corrections came in. We originally got it built and funded it by a lease with an option to purchase. And then apparently, I think in some time around 2000, they decided that they didn't want to keep making those payments, so they, and this is from an audit report that I got from Hugh. Looks like in 2000 they issued some bonds to pay what was remaining on the project, and it was paid off in 2004. Somewhere along in there they put this, they segregated out this amount for the jail and put it on the tax bill. And as far as we know, they didn't raise taxes. They just took it out of the general fund and specifically set it on the tax bill. The idea was to repay the loan that they made to do it, or the bonds that they'd issued to do it. And after 2004, when the obligation was retired, it was just continued to be used for operation and maintenance. But this cleans it up. It brings it, I think we've somewhat treated this as a separate budget. And as such, we've had to have an ending fund balance on it. Now it will be in the county budget, and the monies will go into the general fund, and it will be a subcomponent of the sheriff's budget. Any questions?
Come on up. I don't have any questions because I know pretty much the same story you know. Some of it's twisted a little bit differently, but that's what happens. Stuff that old, people don't remember it clearly. Go ahead, Mr. Beach.
I'm Dale Beach, political activist in Story County. I take this as a touch of pride in my part, because Lance sitting here saying, all people shouldn't complain. They should just step down and do what we tell them and tell us how great we are. I started complaining about this about 4 years ago. It would have been very easy for the county at that time to sweep this housekeeping thing away and do it then. But no, no, no. They just had to keep grinding. Nobody's telling us how to do our business. Well, Mr. Beach did, and Mr. Beach has got to this day, and ha, ha, ha. You people say, I'm a critic. Well, I am a critic, by damn. And these other issues, I take great pride in what Dean has done, okay, Dean. And we need more people to get up here and complain about what we don't like. And Lance's guy's not here saying, oh, Beach, you're taking a cheap shot at Big Lance. And I'd like to also introduce some of this money. We can say we'd get a liposuction machine and we could start bringing all of our employees down to the proper weight-fat ratio that I am.
Does that mean that you're happy with this resolution?
This resolution, I recommend you approve it 100%.
All right, okay.
So moved.
Apparently got some support in the community.
Yes.
My golly, I'm with you on
Mr.
that.
Mr. Commissioner, can we put this item to rest for the final time?
Finally.
Okay, I'm looking for a recommended motion to approve resolution number 395.
So moved.
I'll second that. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. All right. Moving right along. Number 18, discussion and possible action, resolution 14-396, combining the tax rate of the Story County Fire Protection District, NRS 473, in parentheses, Nevada Division of Forestry, and the tax rate of the Story County Fire Protection District, 474, and combining both rates and allocating both to the Story County Fire Protection District 474 and transferring the ending fund balance of 473 District into the 474 District budget at the end of the budget year.
This is another one.
This is Mr. Maddox. As again, you can tell because the staff report he submitted, he did not have signed by me.
We resolved to do away with the 473 last year. This is just finishing up on that resolution, taking the tax rate that we get for the 473 and combining it with the tax rate we get for the 474. And this, along with the next item, which is the ordinance, Section 2.57, deleting it completely and making some changes to Section 2.56. With these two matters, we will cause the Story County Fire Protection District, in parentheses 474, to become basically, I think, a standalone governmental entity.
Yep.
But this is the resolution combining the taxes.
Mr. Beach.
Yes, I waited a long time for this.
So we.
I'd like to commend the
fire chief on work well done in Six Mile Canyon. I like everything they've done, and I wish they could do that year-round everywhere. My concern with these resolutions, does these resolutions take the summer people we've got, and I assume they're not union. They just come in and work in the summer and sit around and do whatever they want to do and then go away. Is this making them union to where they've got the same rights as all the fire people and they're going to be on that big high money?
No is the answer to the question.
The answer is no?
No.
Okay. Second, I hear complaining about unemployment horizon. Do we pay these guys that come down there and look at their binoculars once in a while up in here and do we pay them unemployment all winter when they're not on our hook?
Who are we talking about now?
These fire guys, the ones that we just come on in the summer. They come down, hang around my fire department, and they go out with binoculars and look around. And one guy's got a big tear in his shoe because he sits on the bumper like that on his cell phone 3 hours, 4 hours at a time. I keep track of him. And are we stuck for that unemployment all winter long when these people are off?
I'm not aware if they're eligible for unemployment benefits.
Would it be
Gary, can you respond to that? Do you know?
Under the old system, they are. That you.
Thank you for saying you did a good job in Six Mile, too, Gary.
I can
use all the praise I can get.
I'm a little grumpy, Mr. Beach.
Yeah, well.
That's the closest thing.
Meeting, isn't
it? It is.
You can work right through the rest. Damn.
The guy with the tear in his shoe. I'll shoot that one. They were hired as seasonal employees, consistent with what the past practice was with the 473 fire district. That goes away this year. That's what part of this is. They will not any longer be once they become, and I wish Austin was here, intermittent part-time.
Less than part-time seasonal employees.
Thank you. Yeah. Once they become intermittent, they'll no longer qualify for unemployment. And they'll be all rehired this year. as intermittent employees.
Okay, great.
Thank you. I'm happy.
Okay, good.
You're happy?
Anyone else have any comments on this? Okay, then.
All right, so I'll make a motion then to approve resolution 14396.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved and second to approve resolution number 14-396. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, motion carries.
That's to bed forever.
That's another one.
That's another one. Boy, that's a long time coming.
Done.
It's still coming back at you, the ordinance.
Yeah.
The next item is the ordinance doing away with Story County Code Section 2.57, which is the ordinance governing the 473 fire protection. We're deleting that entire section from the ordinances, and there's some changes to 2.56 that, for the most part, aren't that significant. I don't know, Bob did some of that. You see anything significant?
Cleaned up a ton.
We just added a few sections to make it really clear that the fire protection district was a separate political entity and had its own board and funding. And I'd ask the district attorney to read the title into the record.
The title of the ordinance is an ordinance changing the name of the 474 Fire Protection District, amending the description of the boundaries of the 474 Fire Protection District to include all of Story County, and deleting Chapter 2.57 of the Story County Code to reflect the dissolution of the 473 Fire Protection District and providing other property-related matters.
Okay. Motion to approve then first reading of ordinance number 14256.
I'll second that motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Motion carries. Okay. Item 20. More fire department business. Discussion of possible action, approved purchase of property at 2471 Louse Town Road, not to exceed appraised value of $12,000, whichever is less. Who wants to run with this?
This is, I can. There's an acre of land apparently adjacent to the fire department out in the Highlands that I think is already being used by the fire department. I think whoever the owner is died, and this property is in a trust, and the trust approached us about purchasing the property, and we're going to get an appraisal, and they're going to have a title report done. But if this basically authorizes Pat and I to acquire that property, if the appraised value comes in $12,000 or less.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but this acre is in the 10-acre estate or not?
For the record, Gary Hames, this is that property bill that's directly behind to the north side of the fire station, where all of our equipment's parked, our training props built. This came to light after we purchased the fire station. We had thought for years that that was all part of that same plot, but it's not. It's a separate one-acre parcel. So we have propane tanks on it, equipment storage. We've built a very large training prop that we do all of our Firefighter One courses on. And this just came to light after we purchased the fire station. And that's all I can add to
it. What I was getting at is that would not legally be a buildable lot under the 10-acre rule.
No, I think it's still within the one-acre association.
In one?
Yeah, I don't think it changes till you get past that drainage a little farther.
Past that one?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, still pretty decent price.
And they're not asking for back rent either.
Yeah.
And I want to point out again another very strong local that's had a great hand in this, and that's Arlene Craig with Caldwell Banker. Eileen's a resident of the Highlands and has been fantastic to work with at all levels, really helping us get this cleaned up. So next time you see her, tell her she's done a great job.
And if we buy this, maybe we'll actually have a piece of property we have a deed for.
Okay. Anybody have any questions on this?
Okay, motion to approve the purchase of property at 2471 Lost Town Road not to exceed $12,000 or the appraised value, whichever is less.
I'll second your motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Motion carries.
Okay, this is the building code.
Okay. Item 21, discussion and possible action, a workshop to discuss the proposed adoption of new editions of the 2012 Uniform Codes, the 2012 Northern Nevada amendments published by the Northern Nevada chapter of the International Code Council, and amendments for divide for specific requirements for fire and building in Story County. Mr. Morris.
Good afternoon, Board. Robert Morris for the record again. What we wanted to do is just briefly explain what some of the changes were in the 2012 code and ask the board to go ahead and approve that. There's some amendments to the code that we are also making, and that's in the form of the ordinance that's attached to the packet. And so briefly, what we want the board to do is adopt the 2012 international codes that are listed in the ordinance. Now, there's about 10 of them. what happened was the local jurisdictions also looked at the codes and decided that there should be some amendments to match what goes on in Northern Nevada, and that's these 2012 Northern Nevada amendments. And so there's a third level that we're doing, and that's the ordinance itself. And what that does is it makes specific changes that the people here in Story County, the building department and the fire department, want to do in addition to not only the code and the amendments. So what I've asked is that Shannon Gardner from the building department and then David Silva from the fire department be here just to explain some of the things that make the approval of the 2012 international codes a good thing. So we'll have Shannon start.
Thanks. Good afternoon, commissioners. Ladies and gentlemen of Story County, my name is Shannon Gardner. I'm the Story County Building Inspector. I apologize if this seems like I'm reading from something that's prepared, but it is something I prepared because I'm not very good at speaking off the cuff. It's been approximately 9 years since Story County has done a building code update. I'm here today to propose that Story County adopt current effective versions of building codes. So what are the biggest changes and impacts resulting from current versions of code? In building code for commercial, industrial, and public buildings, the most significant impact is a change in the way buildings are categorized. Buildings are now categorized by risk factor rather than just occupancy type. It has been recognized that during a natural disaster, it may not be practical for every structure to remain standing and functional, but that there are structures that we really need to maintain to remain standing and functional after a natural disaster. Examples of buildings assigned to high-risk categories would include emergency services such as first responders, fire, and police, and essential facilities such as schools, emergency shelters, water plants, and power plants. In the aftermath of a natural disaster, it is important to regain a sense of normal function in people's lives as quickly as possible. Critical and essential facilities are assigned a higher risk category and, as such, are designed and built to a higher standard in the hopes that they will remain standing and functional in the aftermath of a natural disaster. The way that buildings are designed to withstand earthquakes has also changed. In the past, buildings have been constructed according only to the probability of earthquakes. Now, code factors in other geologic conditions, soil types, and the acceleration or deceleration of energy within those soil types. Buildings within the same earthquake zone will react differently depending on whether they are built on solid rock, mud, sand, etc. Under the newer codes, buildings are designed not just on the probability of an earthquake, but on how they will react during an earthquake with the soil type factored in. It's a more scientific approach. The way that wind loads are factored has also changed. The minimum basic wind speed for design and construction is the same. But under the new codes, buildings with higher risk categories, critical facilities, are designed to slightly higher wind speeds. This, again, is an attempt to help communities recover in the aftermath of a natural disaster by assuring that certain facilities remain functional. The way that snow loads are factored has also changed. The design snow loads in pounds per square foot for our region has not changed, but the newer codes now recognize that different building designs affect the way that snow drifts onto a roof. Snow loads are not uniform for all buildings. Newer codes recognize that and allow these considerations to be factored into structural design of a building. Again, this is a more scientific approach. For residential construction, the biggest changes and impacts are with the energy codes. In Story County, building official Dean Haymore has always required that houses be constructed with 2x6 exterior walls and with more than just the minimum insulation. So we have been ahead of the curve when it comes to insulation requirements. What will be an impact for home builders in Story County is more attention to workmanship when it comes to air sealing houses and their heating and cooling systems. There are now requirements for third-party testing to assure that houses don't have excessive air leaks and to assure that heating and cooling duct systems are sealed properly. These energy codes have actually been mandated for adoption by the state of Nevada. Nevada accepted federal stimulus money with the stipulation that they would require all local jurisdictions within Nevada to adopt these codes. The fact is, extensive studies have shown that air leaks are the number one cause of energy loss in residential construction, so these codes will result in more efficient houses. As a member of the Northern Nevada International Code Council, I sat on a committee where we spent a year analyzing these new codes and writing amendments to tailor fit the codes to Northern Nevada. We took input from major trade organizations such as the Builders Association of Western Nevada, the Associated Builders and Contractors, and union representatives from the trades of plumbing, mechanical, and electrical workers. We made sure that the new codes would not enact requirements that do not apply to our region and that they would not have negative economic impacts for Northern Nevada. As an example, we have eliminated a reduction for travel distance to exits in warehouses. The new code language would not have allowed us to continue building the large warehouses that are typical in the Tahoe-Reno Industrial Center. As a group of building code officials, we decided that our current exit travel distance, the maximum travel distance, is safe, and we amended the new codes to reflect that. In reading the amendment package, you will find that a lot of changes have been made for our region and our economic needs. Some of you may be saying to yourselves, why do we want to adopt newer codes at all? It's just a bunch of new regulations and red tape. And trust me, when I tell you that I'm not the kind of guy who anxiously awaits the arrival of new code books. I'm not a code geek who gets excited about newly released versions of the code. But there are ramifications to jurisdictions that do not stay current with building codes. It affects our insurance services rate. If we do not stay current with newer codes, it will reduce our rating, and ultimately it will increase the cost of insurance not only for the county and its facilities, but also for the residents and their homeowner policies. It affects our community rating with the National Flood Insurance Program. If we do not stay current with code, our rating can drop, and our residents in flood zones can lose eligibility for discounts on flood insurance. It can affect FEMA post-disaster reimbursement. I've been informed that FEMA has contested reimbursements in the wake of natural disasters because they have determined that losses would not have been severe if the jurisdiction had been current with its code requirements. Another important item that I've discovered is that it can affect our eligibility for grant funding. Some grant sources require that a community be current with its code adoptions, as they don't want money spent on outdated technologies and construction techniques. We don't want the embarrassment of being denied grant funding by resisting current codes. Other reasons to consider include staying current with new technologies. In a rapidly changing world, code is updated in order to recognize and support new construction technologies. Designers are staying current. The most building designs that are submitted to the building department today reflect code standards that are newer than our minimum requirements. Architects and engineers have a fiduciary responsibility to design to current standards, and they're going to do it whether we require it or not. So by us adopting current codes, we're not making them jump through new hoops. Companies want facilities that are built to current standards. In today's litigious world, you will not find many organizations that are out there seeking locations where they can get away without building to current codes. We want our staff to stay educated and knowledgeable. By staying current with new codes, our staff must stay educated and up to speed in order to be effective at plan reviews and inspections. We want our staff to know what they're talking about when they communicate with companies that are looking to locate within Story County. Last but not least, the newer codes make buildings safer. We want to sleep well, knowing that we are being responsible to future generations by upholding standards that provide for safe structures. And that's all I have for you, unless there's any questions.
I have some comments and questions. I think it's important that we, while this is a team effort, that we focus individually on the disciplines, both building and fire.
Sounds good.
I endured the last time we changed code, and it was a brutal process because of things. You may not have either the experience or the comfort level of making public presentations, but that was the best staff presentation I think I've ever heard, as far as hitting all the points from these are the major differences, and these are why we have to do it, including federal and state mandates, because the Nevada took that energy money, and ultimately, these are the benefits in the long run. Dynamite presentation.
Well, thank you. So, appreciate that.
One thing I want to ask is, can you put it in some very layman's terms, and let's use a building that we're all familiar with, and that would be Sheriff Antonoro and District Attorney Maddox's building on C Street. From a building standpoint, if we were to add on 1,500 square feet single story to the north, I know we're going to exceed 4,500 square feet. This isn't a fire question. I'll get to that one. Tell me, if you would, in just a synopsis, what differences we might experience as we look at a building like that, taking existing 4,500, adding 1,500, and now we have 6,000 square feet.
Well, you know, from a structural standpoint, the building would be designed as a critical facility, housing sheriffs, first responders, and so it would need to be engineered with the intent to have it survive a fairly substantial earthquake. You know, an earthquake that could bring down a lot of other buildings within town. Hopefully that building would still remain standing. You know, our earthquake zone has not changed. Nevada has been determined to be the third most active earthquake state, seismic state in the nation for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And so the engineering requirements, you know, have been in place for a long time to make buildings earthquake safe. They will, you know, the engineering will evaluate the building with a little bit higher risk category, and so it will have a higher level of redundancy, which means that if one component of a structural system fails, there's backup. It's not a technically exhaustive type of construction to meet those requirements. It's really just good practice building. And so the costs really are a minimum factor.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Ready for motion?
No. I think we this is a workshop. Would you expect to take another 9 years before we update the code?
No.
Yeah, there will be a motion on this.
I think that, you know, going 9 years, the code, new code books come out every 3 years. And, you know, I will say that there's a large organization of people that their job is to rewrite code. And they get excited about it, and they do search for reasons to rewrite code. So they're keeping themselves employed by coming out with these new books every 3 years. I think it's reasonable to look at a 6-year cycle. You know, that's allows for a little more time for major changes to be backed up by studies, engineering analysis, and it also allows for us to take a look at how the adoption of newer codes has affected communities that are adamant about staying up on that 3-year cycle. You know, it gives us a chance to take a look at the real effects of it when they are enacted, and allows us a little more time to write amendments to keep the codes fit to our region. And yet, you know, at a 6-year cycle, we're not putting it off so long that it becomes a huge jump to go from one code edition to the next.
Is that what happened this time?
It was a little bit of a stretch to go from the 03 to the 012.
So we should schedule this again when to update them the next time?
Yeah. In 6 years. Yeah. So 2020. We should be looking at adopting the 18 version of code.
And we'll see if David agrees.
Have you found some items in here have been simplified? Because we hear from contractors all the time, every time you guys come up with new codes, it just makes it more cumbersome for the, so that, you know, the builders.
Yeah, I would hesitate to say that it has simplified anything, really. I mean, part of what happens with each code cycle is that they do reevaluate some of the language to make it more understandable. You know, some of the people that write these books, I don't know where they come from, but they certainly don't speak in terms that I'm familiar with. And so, you know, there are sections of the code that I have to read over and over again just to think that I have an understanding of it. And so that's definitely part of it. They do simplify language, they create better definitions, and they try to make it more understandable, and that is an important part of it. So in that regard, I guess it simplifies it a little bit, but the construction world overall and the code requirements, they're not headed in a simpler direction.
And I think an important thing here is, as small as we are, you know, let's take somebody like Jim Collins and the airtight issue, because that's been on the radar for 2 or 3 years at least,
right,
if not longer. Jim Collins typically will vend out to a Reno-based HVAC company or a Carson or a Fallon-based HVAC company. These guys are building houses in the entire region and are well familiar with the airtight issues and the testing. So
yeah,
they're prepared.
And we did also have a workshop here in Story County for local general contractors and opened the doors for anybody that wanted to attend. And, you know, we did some education to teach the contractors what the up-and-coming codes were going to have in them and give them a chance to voice their opinions about them. And, you know, remarkably, there really doesn't appear to be much resistance to the newer codes.
I was going to try and move things along and have David come up and speak briefly, and then I had a couple of points, too, so if you can bear with us.
Sure.
Great job. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Shannon.
Good afternoon. Dave Silva, Fire Prevention and Life Safety Officer. So with the proposed adoption of the 2012 for us, the International Fire Code, Story County, we're currently, we have an interlocal agreement with the State Fire Marshal's Office, which was signed January of 1995. The Fire Marshal is required by NRS 7477 and NAC 477 to perform certain fire and life safety functions in the counties having populations of 35,000 or less. The Story County Fire District has requested that the State Fire Marshal delegate those fire and life safety functions to the personnel of the district in accordance with the section 477.030 of the Nevada Revised Statutes. With this agreement in place, we are required to maintain and follow the current codes of the International Fire Code. Currently, we are following and enforcing the 2006 edition of the International Fire Code. The fire code is 8 years old. By adopting the most current code, the 2012 International Fire Code, we would be maintaining our interlocal agreement with the State Fire Marshal's Office. Without this adoption, we would lose our arrangement or agreement, and the State Fire Marshal's Office would resume the fire and life safety functions that they that the district currently manages. In the adoption, we are also, there's a section of the WUI code, the Wildland Urban Interface. That code book is huge. There's, especially in California, they adopted it, and it's, the requirements within the book would not fit us, this community, this county, at least all of it. So what we are looking at is utilizing the sections on defensible space for fire protection and stuff. One example of the section that we would not, that would not be utilized by us, use an example, is the Highlands. Section 404 is the water supply. Man-made water sources shall have a minimum usable water volume as determined by the adequate water supply needs in accordance with section 404.5. This water source shall be equipped with an approved hydrant. The water level of the water source shall be maintained by rainfall, water pump from a well, water hauled by a tanker, or by seasonal high water of a stream or river. Adequate water supply. One and two family dwellings, the required water supply for one and two family dwellings having a fire flow calculation area that does not exceed 3,600 square feet shall be 1,000 gallons per minute for a minimum duration of 30 minutes. The required water supply for one and two family dwellings having a fire flow calculated or calculation area in excess of 3,600 square feet shall have a minimum 1,500 gallons per minute for a minimum duration of 30 minutes. So a residential, a new build up to 3,600 square feet, they'd have to put a tank in that will hold 30,000 gallons. And then have that, the means of supplying, keeping that water level maintained. And then buildings other than one and two family dwellings, the water supply required for buildings other than one and two family dwellings shall be as approved by the code official, but shall not be less than 1,500 gallons per minute for a duration of 2 hours. That's 180,000 gallons of water storage they'd have to maintain. Shops, garages, you know, detached units over 600 square feet would have to have that water supply. So that's one example in the Wildland Urban Interface book that, while we're not going to adopt the whole book, but just a section that's going to help us in our efforts for fire prevention, and that's the defensible space and some of the building materials, like roofing materials and stuff like that. And then, like I said, we're currently under the 2006 version of the International Fire Code. The 2012 version, which I'm new to the, working for the county, my training to be in this position was taught under the 2012 version of the International Fire Code. I just did a plan review for the St. Mary's Art Center. They're proposing to put a solar array out off onto their property. The 2006 International Fire Code has no requirements, restrictions, or doesn't say anything about solar panels, solar arrays. The 2012 does. So, like Shannon was saying, just keeping up with technology, and the wording in the 2012 is a little bit more clear. There's some new restrictions and requirements, but it's not going to affect, in the big picture, it's not going to be that big of an impeding document that's going to, you know, I sent out an email to at least 30 different contractors that have licenses within our county, both fire protection and just general contractors. I got one email back saying from one gentleman saying that they were too busy, and I invited them all to come here to this workshop. I don't see any contractors out here, but so I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, or if they oppose of it or not. But I think this would be a very good thing for us to adopt the 2012 version of the building and fire codes and the section of the GLUI code, the wall and urban interface, and yeah, that's funny.
Yeah,
come right ahead.
Okay, so having been involved in this process for a while, one of the things I'm not clear on is, let's take the two different types of code compliance on the fire side of the house that I would think you have jurisdiction over. Do a commercial building first. We have a 700,000 square foot brand new proposal. Hasn't started yet for this sake. What are the significant differences going to be under the difference between 2006 and 2012?
The water in the 2012, the water supply to the commercial building is slightly increased to will benefit us because we have current new business that's being erected right now that their fuel loading is going to be a lot more substantial than a lot of our other ones that are already existing out there, and the old, you know, 8-inch supply going to the building wouldn't be adequate enough to distribute the water for the sprinkler systems for that large of a facility, plus with the racking systems and the material that they're storing, like clothing, you got a huge fire load in there. Adopting the 2012 version, there's a lot of amendments within it to where we're not putting a huge impact on it to the businesses. It brings back the authority to the fire chief and the code official to make the justification, okay, we're going to go this route to benefit both parties. So we could protect their facility from fire, and it could keep them from progressing and build their business.
Okay. Other than flow to the sprinkler systems, are there any other significant sprinkler system alterations in the 12 code versus the 6 code?
Not too much. Looking through the 2006 version, 2012 versions, like certain codes in 2006 are still in the 2012 verbatim, word for word, but in a different section. And then a lot of your tables of they've became more clear and increased. So it gives more description for larger businesses, for different hazardous materials, classifications, not too much more restrictions. Just basically it lays out the code, the language, a little more user-friendly.
Okay. Now take that 700,000 square foot brand new one that hasn't started yet and translate it to the 700,000 square foot one that is already in construction.
and may or may not have been permitted by you folks on, or reviewed by you on a plan review basis, but as Shannon knows, is I can't say up and running, but it's up and pouring, or whatever the right phrase is. Mm-hmm. What are they faced with this code adoption?
Well, when the business is sold, if they sell the business and a new buyer comes in and occupies that, during they'd have to get a new business license, new review, and they'd have to meet the new code, the current code.
Okay. So, but as it's currently being constructed now, there is no additional burden on them if they were prepared to meet 6 but not 12. Thank you. Let's switch to residential for a minute. I'm not sure your jurisdiction there, even though you look for me until June. That's only because we're changing reporting relationships. But tell me what your jurisdiction is on residential, and if you have any, I'd be interested in what the real changes are. You explained well what they aren't. We're not going to require them to have 180,000-gallon water tank. But what's your jurisdiction, and what are the impact changes?
Clearances around the property, access to and from the resident as far as for the emergency equipment. It gives the distance, there's a maximum travel distance for the driveway, grade, the road type, the material as far as paved or gravel, and then requiring turnouts. And if it's a dead end, if it's over 200 feet long of a driveway, you're required to have a turnaround on the top sufficient enough for a fire apparatus to get turned around. And then we also look at, like I said, the defensible space as far as the property clearing. And then we are not going to adopt or require the automatic sprinkler systems within the residential. There's other places like California and other counties that are. It'd be a substantial impact on new people coming in to purchase property and have new builds. So
if I'm building a typical house in Virginia City of 3,000 square feet, are there any impact changes from the fire side?
Really, on the residential side, is not too much. I mean, just like your building material, as far as the roofing, more fire-resistant building roofing material, and then just your clearances around propane tanks, your the residence itself, and then the and even the road access is pretty close, the same as the 2006 version.
Okay, thank you for your answers, and thank you for your indulgence. These are things we've discussed through the process that I felt you guys would want to know.
What do you think?
Well, you were going to follow up, Mr. Morris?
I just had a few things attached. Is this 40-page document, which is the ordinance change. And so what I'm asking you to do today is adopt the principle that we're going to the 2012 code. But this would come back for a first reading next month.
Okay.
And I just wanted to give you sort of a heads up as to how to understand what some of this is doing. If you look, there's this first four or five pages is all struck out. So what we're doing is we're taking code that was adopted by the county probably back in the 90s. What they did is they adopted verbatim out of the code book that they were using at the time, embedded it in the code. So what's happened is the codes have changed and the text has changed. So at the end of each paragraph, there's a reference that says IFCA 106 Inspection Authority. So what the new code has a section on inspections that the fire department thinks is better language than we have in the code book from 1990s. So what a lot of this ordinance does is takes out code that's old code, and there's a reference to the code in the new book. So if anybody felt obligated to double check on this stuff, they could go look in the code book and see that provision. And so what it's hopefully going to do is make us more reliant on the language and the codes that we adopt and the amendments that we adopt. There were just two other issues that I think you're going to have to come to grips with. One is appeals from decisions. The current code has it going to the Planning Commission, which it doesn't make very much sense. So the fire department has requested that the appeal goes to the state fire marshal because of the interlocal agreement and the relationship between the two offices. In the building department, I've suggested that you set up a board of appeals, which is in the new codes. All the codes have a board of appeals. There's also an alternative, and like I said, if you're interested in reading this at some point, you can see that new text. There's one other section that I've changed pretty dramatically, and that's about domestic water and the use of water. The way the code is currently written, it doesn't include language that's in the NRS, which is accessory dwelling unit. So the requirement is if you bring in another dwelling unit, mother-in-law quarters, that the state requirement is that you put a meter on a well if you're on a well. And so I've done new definitions and put them in the code, and I think they'll be better. But again, that's something that's new, and the board probably should think about. You will have the opportunity when we do the ordinance, there'll be a second reading where we'll have a public hearing on those specific issues, but I thought I'd at least bring them up now and give you fair warning about that. And so unless there's other questions, we'd ask that you go ahead and make the motion.
Okay, do you plan on continuing working on this, or is it a finished product?
We're working on it as we talk. As David pointed out, the Warland urban interface wasn't done correctly, and the version that you have, I've made a new version. That will be the one that will come forward. But as anything as complicated and as long as this, we are continuing to make corrections, review it. There's another issue in here. There was a code section saying that any mobile home or manufactured home had to be on a continuous footing. And my understanding is that might not be the law that's being enforced. And so what we have to do is decide what we want and make sure that the code matches whatever that is. And so there are going to be a couple of decisions that have to be made either through staff and then present it to the board, or if it's a tough nut, we might have to just give it to the board to decide.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. Any questions on this? Looking for a motion, Mr. President?
Well, let's give this a try as a motion then to give a general approval to staff as needed to begin work on the 2012 uniform codes with a view to bringing this back as required for the Board of Commissioners. That work, Bob?
Yep, that's fine.
It's, you don't want to stick to the staff report motion?
We
adopt it?
I can't remember what the motion is.
They also might bring it back at the next meeting for first hearing for an ordinance.
I printed mine this morning. I didn't bring it. Okay. Recommend a motion. I'll move to adopt the 2012 International Codes and ask the ordinance making the changes be on the board's next meeting.
That works fine.
And I'll second that.
Okay.
We're moving to second to approve. This will be brought back at the next commissioners' meeting as a first reading of an ordinance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, motion carries. Okay, number 22, discussion and possible action. I think we're going to go ahead and continue that.
Staff recommends a motion to continue. This has a one payment to one commissioner, and we'd like to carry it forward to the next meeting.
Yeah, a motion on item 22 then to continue that to the next commissioners' meeting.
And I'll second that. We moved to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Motion carries. Okay, community development and planning. So we have on here possible action licensing board second readings. Are you going to handle that?
I believe Mr. Gardner's going to handle it. Mm-hmm. Oh. He's just got to shift from code to business licenses.
Take one hat off, put another hat on.
Thank you, Commissioners. I'm Shannon Gardner, Story County Building Inspector. Subbing in for the Business License Department. So we're going over second readings, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so Philly's Restaurant, 420 USA Parkway, we're continuing them. They're not ready yet. Burnham Painting and Drywall is a contractor scheduled to perform some work in the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center. We request to approve them. Diebold Incorporated, another out-of-state company performing some work in the industrial park. We recommend to approve them. The Mark Twain Community Center, I've been informed we're still waiting for some nonprofit paperwork regarding their organization, so we'd like to continue them. Preferred Networks Incorporated, home business here in Virginia City, we recommend approval of that. Dogs, home business, dog training here in Virginia City, we recommend approval of that. Sage Hunting Products, another home business, Virginia City Highlands, selling hunting accessories online, we recommend approval for that. Randa Accessories, they're awfully close. We should be issuing a CBO on that building and finalizing all of the code corrections at any time, but unfortunately we are going to continue them until that's been done.
Let me read this back to you, Shannon. We want to continue A, D, and H?
Correct.
Okay. Motion to continue items A, D, and H.
Do I think H is on licensing?
Yes. Licensing?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's an action item.
Yes. Gotcha.
My issue is with the Mark Twain Community Center, nonprofit. I question the intelligence of trying to get this into a nonprofit organization down there. We've got the community chest right there using that building all the time, and we're having problems with our Jeep posse. And why are we biting off more problems? IRS don't like a bunch of this stuff. They just don't like nonprofits. And why are we walking off into deep water again?
Thank you.
My response is that's not germane to the business licensing process.
Motion stands.
Okay. It's been moved to approve.
No.
Continue. A, D, and H. All those I'll second that. So all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
And the motion to approve B, C, E, F, and G.
I'll second that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. All right. Here we go. Number item 25, public comment. Come on down.
I suggest you skip around.
We did that earlier, Mark.
Oh, okay.
We accelerated that after one of our breaks.
Okay.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mark Joseph Phillips, Virginia City resident. I emailed y'all yesterday about a letter I'm going to read into the record. Little bit of history. Back in 2000, school districts in counties in Nevada were allowed to set up their own accounts by putting certain documents in the county treasurer's office, in the commissioner's office, and in the superintendent of public instruction's office. In a search for public records that are supposed to be there, our county treasurer confirmed the documents were in her office, and I got a letter back from superintendent of public instruction that documents aren't there. So in theory, the Story County School District doesn't have the authority to run their own accounts. So there's a remedy. If the next county commissioners by statute have the authority to go look at the accounts, and if you think there's anything wrong with them, you can order those accounts closed and have the funds put in the county treasurer's office. So I'm asking, Dr. Slaby's a stubborn man. Maybe y'all could help me. The remedy is a resolution on the agenda of their next meeting. Resolution notifying everybody of their intent to have accounts separate from the county treasurer's office. And superintendent of public instruction is counting on me to help get this resolved. And I would appreciate it. Here we go. Dear Superintendent Erquiaga, I'm receipt of your letter dated the 1st of April confirming you could find no record that the Board of Trustees, Story County School District, are in compliance with, this is subsection NRS 354.603. I maintain the Story County School District has no legal authority to maintain a separate account or accounts in accordance with this section. I will ask the Story County Board of County Commissioners to determine if there's clear evidence of misuse or mismanagement of school district funds signed by myself. So I'll report back to the superintendent that I've provided this information, and I'm trying to seek a remedy to this. I was a little bit surprised when I got a response back from the superintendent himself, and it appears he's referred my concerns to the Attorney General's office. So,
I received your letter, but this is the first letter I received on this, and so I don't know what documents you're talking about to start with.
It was a week ago. I filed the information in the office of the commissioner's own.
Okay, and then
anyway, this
and the part from the gentleman from the Department of Education. You said you're in receipt of a letter saying that he can find no record that they are in compliance either.
Correct. And I'd already received written notice from the Story County Treasurer that she did not have the documents required for the school district to maintain separate funds.
I'd be looking for a letter from them saying that they are not in compliance, not a letter saying that they are in compliance.
Well, normally in counties in Nevada, that the school district funds or accounts would be in the office of the county treasurer. If the school district wants to maintain their own funds, they need to file some paperwork, which has not been filed. So,
okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Since the district attorney represents both the school district and the county.
We'll have a good counsel. I'll have him look into it.
There you go.
That's my motion.
Say what? There's only three parts have already left.
Okay.
I don't have any people to listen to.
Here's your chance to get in the last word.
People like
Just remember that when you're fighting with your wife, your last word is just the first word of the new fight.
My wife and I haven't had a battle since 1956.
Since she lost her hearing.
On our wedding
yeah,
night.
She lost her hearing.
The DA might have a little battle with his wife from time to time, but I don't argue with mine. You people don't seem to think that there's going to be a tomorrow. I bring issues up to you about Mark Twain, and you say, oh, put it in writing, and we'll give it to the planning council, we'll give it to these guys, we'll give them, blah, 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 blah. Well, I'm not going to go away. I had an issue with the water down in the park, and it got back to the chairman of Lance's little committee down there. And he says, that water's bad. And I says, no, it's not. It's 160 feet from my well to his. And he says, oh, you're probably in a different aquifer. And it's just something about Public Works is disinterested, in my opinion, with Mark Twain. And things aren't going to go away. I showed you guys out there, both of you was down there. I showed you the air conditioner out there that needs some bumpers put in front of it. They ain't done it. No, they ain't.
Brought it up.
Yeah, and then there's 10,000 reasons why they're not going to do it. We've got a big mailbox issue down there. Those people have got 20-foot long boards like this and ties and props under it. Mailbox is wired on, and that's a big issue with the people down there. And who's going to deal with it? You know, we've got this lady and man come up here and talk about all the street lights they've got down in North County. Wonderful street lights. Well, the street sign in front of my house was knocked over by a drunk in a fire truck, 1994. It's gone. Are they going to replace it? I doubt it. Would a street light right there be good? I'd like a street light. Some of my neighbors would like street lights. But nobody's interested in doing anything down there. So, you know, it's just going to just faster and faster and faster. And I like Kay Dean, and I think that issue's not dead yet. That horse ain't laid down and died. And so I'm going to just keep on it, you know. And just like Bill said, oh, well, right from the get-go, we got rid of Dale Beach. Well, let me tell you what, you ain't got rid of Dale Beach ever.
I never said that.
Huh?
Yes, you did.
Oh, well, right. Maybe I did.
Yeah, you did.
That's been a while.
And you got rid of it.
Well, the streetlights that were brought up for Lockwood or for the park down there, they're lights for the park.
Park lights.
They're park lights.
They're not street lights.
And they got to be right out there and work.
You can't have, you know, Story County has a dark sky ordinance. You can't have any
If you're missing a stop sign where there once was, put in a request for a stop sign replacement. You said that the stop sign by your house is missing.
Oh, no, it's a street sign. The stop sign
is
Story County. Why not? One boat broke and fell down in 2 days, you put up a new sign. Now, this is a street sign that says, going to go, San Clemens. So we don't have different signs down there. Color don't matter because of color anyway. But somebody over that park don't even care. They've got San Clemens Street, San Clemens Road, San Clemens Avenue. Well, my property says San Clemens Avenue on when I bought it. And down there, we've got all different ones.
Okay. Put in a request for a street sign replacement with Public Works. Okay?
And pay.
Don't ask for everything in one meeting. Anything else?
We want you to come back.
Okay, meeting's adjourned.